why a decent income is no longer enough to afford a home in Canada, which is kind of crazy.
Yeah.
Look, I get it. The Toronto real estate market is confusing. Whether you're a new or experienced investor or just looking for a home to raise your family in, join us at Broadview Table Talks as you sit around the table with my friends and talk about the real estate and the ever-changing market in Toronto.
And we are live. We haven't done this in a while, actually.
No, it's been a while.
That's the whole premise of the show.
I know.
A table talk. We're supposed to be talking around the table, right? Anyway, let's talk about what a lot of Canadians are wondering about, a lot of people are wondering about. I saw this article. It says, why a decent income is no longer enough to afford a home in Canada, which is kind of crazy.
Yeah.
I just want to butt in real quick. This is an article that kind of shows up once a month.
In BlogTO?
Not just BlogTO, but every social, every news outlet, it comes up once a month, and it always gives me a new number. So I think the last time I saw it, it was a couple of weeks ago, but it was at, like, they were talking about how even 160K for comfortable living in Toronto or affordability in terms of houses is not enough, which I need this kind of debunked because I'm starting to lose hope for everybody here.
Well, you know, a lot of people are upset about what, first of all, the millennial population or the most people that don't have homes are really upset about the Canadian government.
Yep.
The Liberal government.
They feel like life has been stolen from them, that they've been lied to.
Because of inflation. Right. And, you know, Bank of Canada has a mandate of 2%, so anywhere from 1% to 3% of inflation. Mm-hmm. But we all know it's much higher than that. And specifically, housing is a lot more higher than that. Mm-hmm. We're seeing price increases of double-digit growth until the interest rate hikes, which they're trying to get a control of, right? Mm-hmm. So I think that the average population is right in saying that they're really upset about what's going on. Yeah.
Stagnant wages are definitely a problem.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I'm joking. joking. I want to pay you guys more. Okay, no. the real thing is, look, even a good income, and that article, that headline actually really got to me because it's like even a good income is not enough to get a house nowadays. You have to have equity from before. You have to have, you know, maybe BOMAD, Bank of Mom and Dad.
Yeah, you have to have like a sizable down payment.
Right, and how do you get that side of it? Like, it's unfair that, you know, I was born earlier than, say, Neil was, for example, that I have more equity because I invested into the real estate market. Now I have capital to be able to buy homes, whereas Neil doesn't because he doesn't have that opportunity to do so.
Yeah.
Fortunately, this is the level playing field. I mean, this is the playing field we're born with, right? And you got to shift from that. So to answer your question, Neil, about $160,000 as an income, dual income, single income, whatever, salary to afford a home, generally they say the rule of thumb was that five times your salary, your gross annual salary, is what your mortgage amount would be, generally, right? There's obviously plus or minuses if you have other debts, things like that. It all relies on the gross debt service and total debt service ratios. For generally, that's what banks use to lend to you for the qualification rules.
Yep.
So if you use a rule of five times your salary, let's just say for round purposes, you make $100,000.
Okay.
Then that means the mortgage they'll lend you is $500,000.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you have to have some sort of savings for down payment. You have to have some sort of savings for the closing costs, right, which could equate to about 5% of the purchase price. So you had to factor all that in. And you don't necessarily need to have 20% down, especially if it's your first home. Remember, a lot of people get confused with that. Right. So if it's under 500,000, that portion of it, it's only up to 5%.
Yep.
After that, from 500,000 to a million is 10%.
Yep.
So it could be a combination of, let's call it 7.5% for somewhere between 750,000. Yep. Or actually, no, it's 10%. Anyway, you know what I mean?
Yep.
Like 7-ish percent, 7-8%. Okay. That being said, you're going to be negative equity because of the closing costs and everything. If it's going to cost you 5% to close on it between land transfer taxes, if it's in Toronto, there's Toronto land transfer taxes, then there's Ontario, then there's legal fees and there's adjustments and taxes and you know what I mean? Like it's a lot of things that are involved in that. And if you're only putting 5% down, then guess what? That's all your equity, right? So, and then by the time you sell it, right, you got to pay realtor fees, right? You got to pay whatever, moving costs, all that stuff, you're going to be like, it's going
to
be tough.
You have to buy discharge your next property.
Mortgage discharge fees. Just for the actual property you buy.
Yeah.
If you're buying with 5% down, you can be negative equity by the time you sell it.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
Right. By the time you pay, again, mortgage discharge and realtor fees at the end of the day.
Yeah.
So anyway, long story short, yes, you can buy it with less than 20% down. It's five times your salary is generally what it would take to get your mortgage. However, the cost of a home is on average about 10 times your current salary.
Yeah.
That's the problem.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And a lot of people are upset about that and angry about that. I don't blame them, but there's creative ways to get started in the real estate market, such as,
and what are some of them?
Well, right now, it's funny that you bring this topic up because we're also seeing a lot of news about how people are actually searching for other cities to live in that are a little bit more affordable. You know, they're looking out west, they're looking out east, they're moving to areas that are less populated than the urban dense centers that we have in Toronto and Vancouver. You know, Edmonton's a place, Halifax is a place, and we're hearing that people are starting to move out there, especially for millennials. Like, if anyone's studying any major demographic journal, they'll see that one of the largest demographics leaving a city right now, like Toronto, are millennials, those who are in their prime real estate buying years. You know,
and I think that's why they put that new housing minister, Sean, whatever his name is, because he's kind of like that millennial group, 30-ish, right? So he kind of relates to them, but I think he's kind of like the fall guy, apparently. But anyway, whatever. Politics aside, you're right. Like, millennials are leaving en masse, right? Because it's unaffordable to be here. But the problem is all the jobs are here in Ontario and Toronto. And that's why a third of the population moves to Ontario when they come to Canada. And we're talking about 1.2 million people last year and projected to have up to 1.4 million this year, right? We're on track for that. It's a lot of people, and we're only building 250,000 homes a year in Canada.
And we're seeing the federal government actually announcing that they're, you know, not fully responsible for the housing policies of each province.
Yeah, I heard that quote too, right? Trudeau said that, and it's actually true though. Like, it is not their main mandate.
Right.
You know, housing generally primarily is a municipal and provincial issue, right? Like, with building permits in City of Toronto, for example, and then you have like the zoning laws in Ontario.
But it's interesting because they do have a lot of policies that actually do affect housing for a lot of people.
Of course, of course.
Bank of Canada, they've got immigration policies.
Yeah. You know, like, I think inherently it all comes down to the fundamental issue that property owners don't want their values to drop. And that's why I get so angry with people online on like Reddit and all these other forums that want the housing market to burn and crash. It's like, okay, you want it to crash until when? Until you own a home? Do you still want it to go crash when you own a home? Like, what's that limit? Like, what happens when your friend over there still wants it to crash more, but you own a home? What do you do?
Yeah.
Anyway, so I don't think it's the whole point is that housing is gets more and more expensive because people don't want to sell for a loss if they don't have to.
Right.
Right.
They'll hold on to it for as long as they can.
Right. And they'll only sell at a profit, really.
Right.
Or until it gets to higher than what they pay
for. Like a perceived value that they think is worth selling it at.
Right. So the Bank of Canada helps with leverage. They set interest rates, first of all. They have nothing to do with housing either, except for the housing is a portion of their CPI basket. And it's only like a small percentage.
Yes.
Like housing in general, I think it's like 40% of the basket or close to 40%. Mm-hmm. But the actual mortgage costs are like 6.something%.
Yeah,
like
it's very low. It's less than 10. Check me on
that. Yeah. Right. But then there's other things like rebuild cost or renovations or maintenance, things like that, taxes and all that. Right. Yeah. All that stuff. Right. But I think that their policies, yes, affect us in our current stage of capitalism where we're at now, where houses cost so much and you have to get leverage and you can't just buy it out cash like our forefathers, our parents, our grandparents did. Right.
Right. Or they were handed, you know, titles or deeds to certain lands to build certain things on it.
Are you talking about the feudal areas?
Yeah, a long, long time ago.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, nothing's handed to us now, especially as millennials.
Yeah, yeah, for sure, for sure. So it's going to be a problem. But, you know, there's other things like fractional ownership as well, too. Right? Actually, but speaking of the migration thing, population, I want to see how many people left Ontario this year.
Ooh.
Oh. All my friends.
So, yeah, a lot of your friends are leaving Toronto.
No, so, okay, so going, taking a few steps back, and I don't know if you want to move on to this already, Ken, but a big problem right now is that the supply is really low. And when we're wondering, like, why is it really low? And we just previously talked about, like, people who want to sell, or they don't want to sell, but they have to sell. And there are reasons why they have to sell, right? So then we bring on what we call the six D's. Six D's? Six of them, right?
Yeah.
Which, if you can name them, if you can help me out, Michael, relocation or divorce, distance.
Diapers, diamonds, debt, and distance.
Right. So just catering to those people then. Is that why prices, and we get articles all the time, prices go up or prices are at all-time high, prices are at all-time low, changes every week. But right now, it's at a high. So is it because the supply is just nobody wants to sell it, or?
Well, okay, so you said like many.
I said so many things. It's okay, so confusing. First of all,
let's unpack it.
It's so confusing.
It's so confusing. Yeah, let's unpack that. I hate that word. But anyway, so first thing you said was supply.
Yeah.
You said about the 60s, which we'll get into in a minute.
Yeah.
And then you also talked about.
Not selling if you don't have to because the people want to offer less money. Which is the 60s, though.
No, supply. You talk about supply.
Yeah. Okay,
so the reason why supply is we can't keep up with the pace of immigration. First of all, if we're allowing over a million people, 1.4, 1.2, 1.4 million people, however you slice it, whether it's non-permanent or permanent residents into Canada, temporary workers or students or whatever, that eventually a third of them become permanent residents.
Mm-hmm.
We can't keep up with the supply because, first of all, there's a lot of zoning policies, right? It all becomes, the major one is the NIMBYism part.
Yeah.
If you own a house in Toronto or Ontario or any kind of municipality in Canada for that matter, just inherently, you just don't want all of a sudden this massive density right beside you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, yeah. You don't want a big tower in front of you because then that causes a lot of problem, right? Like you're
Danforth.
right. I mean, so, well Danforth is, there's a lot of policies where you can't go higher than, I think, 6 or 7 stories or whatever, right? But it's ripe for like a 40-story, like we're right in the subway line. Why don't we have 40, 50-story towers there? You know, why don't we? Like there's going to be one in Pape and Danforth coming up.
Mm-hmm. Proposed.
Proposed, and it's probably going to go through, right? But like, if you think about the rest of Danforth, it's all primarily like 3-4 stories.
Yeah.
Maybe 6 stories, maybe.
Well, there's that, 16-story building that's at, Danforth and Coxwell.
Okay, whatever. Anyway, the point is that there's not a lot, it's not like
Yale there's
Street.
Not a lot. Yeah,
it's not like Yale
yeah.
Street.
Yeah.
And the reason
yeah.
why is because if you're living in that neighborhood, you don't want those guys beside you because they clog up the streets. There's no parking anywhere. There's so much traffic, you can't walk anywhere. Even the people traffic, there's too much people.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of crime. And like, there's just a lot of more stuff. People want peace when they're at home.
Yeah.
And that's why they, unfortunately, have the rights to veto a lot of rules. And the Ford government is trying to take that away. And the people won't have as much, like the neighbors, immediate neighbors won't have as much say in the whole policy as I forgot what the rules are, but they're basically taking that away from the Committee of Justice, not Committee of Justice, where is it that they get to, they have their say in what actually gets developed. They have a community consultation. So that's going away.
Like the planning committee or something.
Yeah. So there's that. And then there's also the amount of labor to be able to build these kind of places, right? So first of all, zoning doesn't allow you to create as much. Like mm-hmm. you're limited to what you can create. Mm-hmm. Even if you were allowed to create what you can create, you don't have the staff, you don't have the labor, the manpower to create it. And then forget about that, the cost of construction and cost of materials, those two things alone, cost of permitting.
Yep.
Which is also higher.
All those costs, which is higher, which makes projects not feasible anymore. So that's why we don't have the supply. Those are the three main reasons.
Got super
cost,
expensive
labor, and zoning. Yep. Sorry?
Got super expensive during COVID.
Right, and prices are like inflation, all that kind of, they're kind of a bit sticky. Oh, it's one thing I should note about inflation. A lot of people think that inflation, then when they want it to come down, it doesn't mean that prices are coming down, by the way.
No.
It just means that the rate of change is going to slow down.
Yeah.
So when they're trying, and the Bank of Canada is trying to aim for a 1% to 3% rate of inflation, they're talking about it's going to increase by 1% or 2%. It doesn't mean it's going to come down.
Yeah.
Just so everyone's clear about that.
Because inflation's a rate of growth, not rate of price.
Right.
Yeah.
That talks a little bit more about like the new construction though. But like, what about the resale supply? Even that has been low recently, right?
Yeah, I mean the issue with resale is if you think about it, if you're selling something, you have to go somewhere, and where are you going to move to? If you know, it's just like a whole big chain effect, right?
Yeah.
You know, it comes from like generally you're probably going to upsize. Maybe there's downsizers, but like if that inventory is not unlocked, then where are they going to move to?
So that's what we dealt with recently in Newmarket. Right, somebody wanted to downsize.
Right,
they had a big house.
Right,
and they wouldn't sell until they got the right price. But also, they needed the proper house that they wanted to buy. So we ended up buying first, we ended up selling first, and then it was like massive crunch time to find the right house to buy.
Then there's the issue of empty nesters, right? Mm-hmm. There's people that are in the city of Toronto or anywhere, actually, really for that matter, and their kids have moved out, got their own jobs, got their own places, rented, bought, whatever. And it's just like maybe a couple or even a single person there in this 3 or 4 bedroom house, detached house that's paid off.
Yeah.
Right. Like my parents, for example, two of them are still together. I mean, still alive, which is great.
Mm-hmm.
Right. They're in this massive, but they're in a big family 4 bedroom house, which should be catered to families, but they're not moving because their house is paid off. They don't want to pay maintenance fees. They don't want to live in a condo. Where are they going to go?
Right.
And that's just underutilized homes that could be used for somebody else. So I'm excited for the new multiplex. What's it called again? The expanding housing options for neighborhoods, where you're allowed to have, as of right, up to a fourplex per house, yeah, plus an initial garden suite or lane suite.
Right.
So potentially 5 units, 4+1 units, to utilize the housing more.
Yeah.
Right? Because they should be, you know, my parents' house, for example, they need a upgrade. So they, well, they're in Markham, so it's different, right? But if it's in Toronto, like that zoning hasn't come into Markham yet. Mm. But as of right, in Toronto, if you have examples of that, you can renovate that so you can have tenants in there as well too, and keep it separately contained units so they're not bothered by it.
Yeah.
And then that'll provide them with a retirement income.
Yeah.
You know? So I think that'll be a good change, but I still don't think it's enough to meet the amount of people.
That's only a portion of it.
Get to garden suites. I was just complaining about that like 2 days ago.
What about it?
Well, I mean, nobody, what's the point of the garden suites if nobody wants to build them?
Because they're so expensive, right?
Yeah.
Like if you're going to spend, you know,
it's not helping us
$350 a square foot to build something, get a 1,000 square foot house, that's $350,000 that you build, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, like any, okay, well, anyway, the cheapest I've seen is around $250 to build a garden suite. Mm-hmm. Like, it's really expensive.
Yeah, I don't want to sway too much from it, but even they were going, they're getting very nitty gritty about it. So, the permits in order to grant these garden suites they're hard to obtain because, how big are they supposed to be? Only like around 650, right?
Up well, to depends 650? On the lot size, right? Yeah, so they have to have a setback, size? They have to have a side setback,
front, okay,
and they have to have access percentage for
roofing coverage,
right?
Right, lot coverage for green right. space. They have to have fire, ambulance, and
so in this article,
access.
They were just talking about this this one property where the max that they can build is 650 square feet interior for this garden suite, right?
Right.
Now, it's difficult for these owners to be incentivized to build these things because you can have like a little, what are those plants? Those plants that are just outside the home. What are those called? Those plant boxes?
Planter boxes.
Planter boxes right outside a window that takes up part of the interior space. So there's a lot of math and there's a lot of like there's a difficulty, a lot of loops box. That you got to go through it.
Yeah, you don't
well, have then to, you're gonna you have a cube. You're gonna have a cube, right?
I don't think it's about the what you're gonna build. I think it's more the cost feasibility, right? So for some people, they can't afford $300,000, $400,000, $500,000, depending on how you want to make it, right? So that's the issue. Plus, some people don't want to have their backyard gone, right? So it's I don't think it's gonna take 100% adoption. I don't think 100% of the people are gonna adopt it or a majority. It's gonna be a small percentage, but anything you do can help.
It is right? It is actually a good plan for anyone who wants to generate some rental income off their land, though, because if you think about it, 650 square feet, if you were to rent that out in a condo downtown, that's slightly over $3,000, just a bit.
Mm-hmm.
If you're paying $300,000 to build the thing, I mean, that's way cheaper than buying a 650 square foot condo downtown just to generate the same amount of revenue.
Okay, so back to the net migration. So in Ontario, we've had interprovincial migration. The population as of January 1st was 15.3 million.
Mm-hmm.
And population growth in April, so end of first quarter, was 15.5 million. So it actually increased by 200,000 people. So we're having a net increase, whether it's plus or minus, I don't know. Q1 2023 looks like it's more people moving out, but the problem is we had new people coming into Canada nationally, and they all came to Ontario.
Mm-hmm.
So out of 40 million people that we have in Canada, 15 million live in Ontario. Mm-hmm. So that gives you a good stat of what's happening here because all the jobs are here at the end of the day.
All the jobs are here.
All the density is here. So if your friends are leaving, that's going to be a problem because we're not going to have young talent and we're going to have a lot of bills to pay to support the social system really at the end of the day. And that's why the government as a national housing strategy is importing more people.
Yep.
But that's causing a problem.
Yep.
Yeah.
Because if, assuming that everybody has a house, if a million more people are coming here, but we're only building 250,000 homes, and the average house size, according to StatsCan, because I looked this up, is 2.6 people per household,
right?
That only gives you 400 and something thousand, under 500,000 homes. Right? That you need to have. Sorry, that we're only able to build.
Yeah.
Like we're only able to accommodate 500,000 people, but we're increasing it by 1.something million. So that means half the people that are coming here don't have homes.
Right.
Which is a problem.
Yeah.
And that's why we're seeing bidding wars in rentals. Oh, and I saw another stat the other day too, that there's double the amount of renters now as opposed to home buyers in recent times.
Yeah.
So that means either the home buying population is shrinking by half, or the amount of renters are doubling.
Doubling, yeah.
Or one of the combination of there somewhere.
Combination of both.
Yeah, which tracks what we're seeing, because, you know, not every single house is being listed, or never, not every single home is being listed with an offer night. And we're seeing more and more people actually compete for rentals. And this is just not in Toronto, too. This is in Toronto, Mississauga, Markham, Richmond Hill, Vaughan. It's all over the GTA.
Okay, so not to put a negative spin on it, back to positivity. If you own a home, the average price just came out. The market stats for July, which was last month, just came out yesterday. Average sales price is now at $1.18 million. That's across all housing types, condos, townhouses, detached, everything, throughout all of the GTA, which means York Region, Peel, Durham. And Toronto, and Durham. Yep. That's right, those four areas. The average price is up by 4.2% year over year. And the sales volume is actually up by 7.8%, just under 8% per year. That being said, it's down month by month, of course, but that's because of seasonality. So the number of new listings up by 11.5%. Number of active listings is slightly up by 0.3%, so pretty much flat, let's call it.
Yep.
And the average days on market, property days on market, which includes cancel and relist, things like that, it's actually down by 17%. Down to 24 days, where previously last year was 29 days at this time.
That's huge.
That's huge. So that the July numbers are strong for the real estate market, which kind of concerns me because of the Bank of Canada rates. They're looking at this closely, right? And I guess that actually should say something about why I think that there might be another increase. Maybe not this year, maybe next year for sure. And that's why I'm kind of scared personally. Because... inflation rates were what last month?
2.8%.
There you go. So that's within their target, the core inflation between 1% to 3%, which is what the Bank of Canada is trying to get to target. Sounds great. Yep. You might think we're there, but I don't think we're already there yet because of something called base effects, which is year-over-year growth. And the problem with measuring year-over-year growth... Okay, so what happens if you don't measure by year-over-year growth?
You have nothing to compare it to.
Right, because last month could be very different than this month.
Yep.
For example, August, the August numbers when they come out in September is going to be much lower than July's numbers for the average price and probably the average number of sales.
For sure.
Sales. And why is that?
Seasonality effects.
There you go. Because people are on vacation. People are thinking about Muskoka. They're thinking about Italy. They're thinking about travel. They're thinking about like not being here. They're thinking about just enjoying life because we finally get a break to enjoy summer.
Well, the kids are also out of school, so they have to go do something. They're gonna travel. They're gonna spend time with their kids. So they're not focused on buying or selling a house.
That's people without without kids. Yeah,
people with kids. Yeah.
They have their hands full.
Yeah.
Right. Me and you included.
Yeah.
But some people without kids, for example, they're out there enjoying the weather because why not? It's
they're
nice.
At the cottage.
Yeah, there you go. So no one's thinking about moving. So that's why you have to measure not from month to month, but year over year to look at the same time last year when the weather was relatively the same.
Yeah.
But the problem with that is that it creates these effects where, okay, so remember the inflation rates? They rose up sharply, right, in 2022.
Yeah.
Throughout 2022. And that's why the government started cranking the dials to increase the interest rate to bring it back down.
Yeah.
So eventually in July, they actually brought it back down and started curving slowly like this. So, yes, our curve now was, okay, so the rate from, how do I draw this out? I wish I could draw it, but the increase from January to last January was huge. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but it was like that.
Yeah.
So eventually it slowed down, and now it's tapered off. I think in May it was like 3.something%.
3.7, I think.
Yeah, something like that. And then in June it was 2.8%. Yeah. That's because that tapered off. But then if this levels off, which it did in 2022, and our current inflation keeps going up because people are spending, that gap is going to get bigger again.
Again, yep. Which means Bank of Canada has to start introducing more measures.
Right, because they're reactive towards the three preferred measures of inflation, but mainly core inflation, let's just look at that. And if that gap gets bigger, they're going to react to that. Hopefully they won't. Hopefully they'll try to wait it out and see when, you know, because they say that it takes about 18 months for the inflation, the interest rate increases to take an effect in their economy. Yep. So hopefully they'll recognize that. But they also look at not just inflation numbers. They also look at job data and a whole bunch of other things, right?
Yeah, like GDP.
Average wages and GDP and all that, right?
Unemployment rates. Yeah.
Exactly. So let's hope for the best. But if it's based on just inflation numbers alone, I don't know. We might be in for a rough ride.
Yeah. Well, I mean, this is going to be an extended rough ride, especially because inflation is a lagging indicator.
Right.
So no matter what Bank of Canada decides to do now, we still have to wait and see what happens, if there's going to be any results.
Let's see. And then, the other thing I keep seeing in the media is the months of inventory is increasing. For all those people that want the real estate market to burn and crash, they keep saying, oh, months of inventory is increasing. Yeah, you idiot. Of course it's going to increase. It's like summertime, right? Like, there's not as much sales. In fact, the sales from this month was, what, 5,000 or so?
But just over 5,000.
It was low.
Last year it was under 5,000.
Right. So, but last year, but last month was like 7,000. I don't have it in front of me. I gotta look for it.
So
but
sales was 5,250 for this month. Right. Last year it was 4,870.
But that's what I'm saying. So you're comparing year over year.
Year over year.
But if you compare month over month. Okay. So last month, the number of sales was, oh no. Okay. So May's sale, I don't have it in my thing here, my spreadsheet. But last month was 9,000. Sorry. May was 9,000. This month were 5,000 sales.
Yeah.
So the problem with months of inventory is that it skews a little bit. Because what's months of inventory? Well, it's active listings divided by the number of sales.
Yeah.
So if active listings are flat, but the number of sales have dropped, then that's going to increase
months of inventory. Yeah. And there's carryover from like stuff that wasn't sold last month, and new listings are coming out this month. So,
well, it only looks at active inventory, right? So
it's a huge skew.
Right. So you got to look, you can't look at that number in isolation, in other words. No, and the problem with looking at annual growth is that it's, the numbers are skewed because you're only looking at a small portion of time, but you need to do it because of seasonality. So there's no better measure than the year over year measure. That's the only thing you look at. Unless you zoom out and look at the average trend, you do trend line, regression analysis, all this kind of crap.
Yeah.
But like, look, it's just numbers at the end of the day. The numbers are, the fundamentals is that we're not building enough homes. There's like four times the amount of people that are coming into Canada than we have homes for. What do you think is going to happen to the prices?
They're going to keep going up.
Yep.
That's that.
Okay.
So that's the way I look at it when people ask me, where do you think the market's going to go? Well, it depends where you are at. And the reason why we can't give general advice about real estate or investments for that matter is because every situation is different.
Yep.
Let's get into the 60s again. Right. So people only move in today's market. They're not buying for investments for the most part. The investors are kind of like not really there anymore because it's a tough time with carrying costs. Maybe in the pre-construction market, because you're buying out 4 years in the future, you're buying out like a future contract for something that's built today. But the problem is the cost of new construction in order to satisfy the builder's numbers or performas, they have to sell at a certain price.
Yes.
But the resale market is not there yet. It's not even close to there.
No.
Right? So if you're looking at downtown Toronto, you're looking at like average, what, $1,800 per square foot. But the resale market now is like 10,000 to 11, 12 maybe per square foot. Will it reach up to 16, 18? $100 per square foot.
I mean, we've also seen $2,000 per square foot too.
Well, yeah, it depends especially where you're downtown. At. Depends what, because there's a lot of general things you could talk about, like, you know, the views and terraces and all that kind of prestige of the building, whatever. But people are not as happy to buy real estate right now as investments.
No.
Right? The smart ones are because they know it's an opportunity to buy.
Yes.
If they have the cash for it.
If, a lot of the investors that we deal with, sometimes they're people who are leveraging themselves. They're trying to
buy again.
Yeah, they're trying to build wealth.
Yeah, so in this market, you should be deleveraging, I think, personally. If you're over leveraged, I think you should get out of that because the cost of capital is so high. Anyway, so the point of the thing is that people in the 6D categories are people that are moving because of, rhyming off really quickly again, death, divorce, diapers, distance.
Debt. Distance.
I said that distance.
Divorce.
Diapers. Diamonds. Okay, so death, obviously, when people die, people pass, estate sales. Like, what are you going to do with the property? You inherited a $2 million property. What are you going to do with it? Mm-hmm. You're probably going to sell it, unless you want to put the money into fixing and flipping it or fixing and renting it out and continuing keeping it within, you know, you're spreading between two or three or four kids, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm. Or extended family members and stuff. So we had a couple of situations this year. And the family just didn't want to hold on to the property more. It just would have cost too much to bring it up to a state where you would want to rent it out. So they opted to sell, right? That's one situation. Diapers, if you have new babies, you're looking at extra bedrooms because eventually over time they're going to need their own space to sleep or whatever. So that's another primary motivator. And those people, like myself in those situations, like myself included, I kind of course I care about what the economy is doing, but like at the end of the day, I can't wait. I can't wait to move.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So then there's that. And then what else is there? There's diamonds. If you get engaged, right? Same thing. Kind of like
you're thinking about long-term planning. You need space.
Right.
Maybe thinking about kids. Maybe thinking about getting a dog or a cat. You need space.
Yep.
Yeah. And then there's debt.
Which is deleveraging, for example. So we just had lunch with somebody right now where they're not in debt, but they're thinking that maybe they want to, because interest rates are so high and the carrying cost is so high, maybe they want to sell that property that's accumulated so much of equity right now, sell it a little bit lower, but then just pay down their debt. So essentially they get a 6 or 7% winning by not having to pay that debt, right? So automatically guaranteed to make that money.
Yeah.
That makes sense. So paying down debt, deleveraging is one way to do it. Distance, meaning that if you relocate for a job, like we had a client that moved to New York for a job and they need to sell.
Yeah.
There you go.
It happens a lot with working from home too right now.
Because the distance of commuting in, now that the people are wanting to go back to the office, is an issue.
Yeah.
Right? So that's another life situation. What's the last life situation we missed out?
So we did death, diapers, diamonds. Is divorce still one of them?
Divorce, that's the other one. Divorce. Yes, yes, yes. We've had a couple of situations, unfortunately, where they just, And I'm hearing situations where people want to actually stay in the same house, just like, you know, you get the upstairs, you get the downstairs, whatever, you get one side of the house. But there's other people that just can't stand being in the same house together. And they're just, it's life situations. They don't care what it costs.
Yeah.
Let's get me out of this situation. You know what I mean? So
for sure.
So primarily, there are still people trading. It's just the only ones that are active in the market right now is the ones that have to. Not the investors, unless there is some good pre-con project out there.
And in fact, there's been actually more people trading this year over last year. But compared to, let's say, July in 2020, the number of sales was 11,000. It's like double the amount that we have now.
Wow.
More than double, actually.
Yeah.
Before the interest rate hikes. So maybe that tells you something, right? And you look at the previous July in 2019, it was 8,500. And the July before that was close to 7,000. But that's when we had some kind of issues with the Fair Housing Plan.
Really tells you how tenacious real estate pricing is in Toronto.
It does move up and down pretty quickly.
Yeah.
It does. I thought it was more stable. And over the long run, it is. Depends how you zoom out.
Yeah.
But if you look at it in a small, like micro, and like month to month or year over year, even for that matter,
yeah,
it goes like this.
Yeah.
I see. That's why I get the article every week. This is everything's plummeting. Sides. Everything's so expensive.
Yeah. And it's so funny. From the same publication, you'll get one opposing article and the other one says, yeah, prices are great. And the other one says, prices are shit. I don't know. It just depends how you interpret it. And I think in the long run, you can't go wrong if you think the fact that everybody needs a place to live.
Mm-hmm.
If you're looking at residential real estate.
But while we're talking about, you know, places to live, let's talk about, you know, open and closed bidding for houses in Toronto.
Oh, that's what we're going to talk about
today.
There
you go.
That's what it was. Should we save it for another topic? Yeah, we'll save it for another podcast. We'll talk about, anyway, coming soon into the real estate market, soon you're going to be allowed to have open bidding. In other words, because before we weren't allowed to do that because we weren't allowed to disclose what, you know, for privacy, what the previous person was bidding for.
For sure.
And now, as a changes to our rules, as of December 1st, 2023, the real estate board, given from a lot of pressure from the public, is going to allow open bidding, or they're going to be forced to allow open bidding. It doesn't mean that they sellers have to do open bidding, but there's a chance that they can do open bidding. This guy's snoring. All right. Okay, anyway, let's sign off. Let's save it for next week. I know this is kind of a boring topic. It's our 14-year-old intern. That's what he does. It's over his head. Anyway, thanks for tuning in. I'll catch you next week.
Add it up.
Thanks for sticking out to the very end. I hope you got some value out of this. Do me a favor, please press like and subscribe. But more than anything, leave me some feedback so we know what to produce for you going forward. Thanks again.